Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. And in today's episode, we'll be unpacking the events and facts which were observed in the case of Matebe versus Cullinan Diamond Mine, a judgment which was recently delivered on the 1st of August 2025. And this is an interesting case to discuss within the occupational health and safety space, especially when looking at time limits, which an employee can bring a claim to the court, and specifically the labor court and the jurisdiction of the labor court, to hear matters relating to occupational injuries, matters which, in the, as you'll see in this case, was a delictual claim. Now, we'll engage with the facts of the case, the issues at hand, the finding of the court, and the general takeaway. I'm Khudisha Pashan, an employment law senior associate at CDH. And joining me today is Fiona Lepan, a director in our employment law department, who has a vast experience in the occupational health and safety space. Fiona, thank you so much for your time. And I believe that it will be very interesting to our listeners.
Thank you very much, Khadishu. As a point of departure, the case seems straightforward, but there are some complications attached to it by virtue of the manner in which this case was brought before a court. And just to give a brief overview of the facts, Mr. Matebe is said to have contracted an occupational asthma during the course and scope of his employment at the first respondent's mine, being Cullinan Mine. In fact, this diagnosis was confirmed by his medical specialist, who advised him to refrain from engaging in any work-related activities at the mine until his health returned to a better condition, so that that could render him fit to carry out his occupation at the mine. The mine refused to have him removed from its premises in that manner because it has its own system of occupational surveillance, which would have allowed its own occupational medical practitioner, who carries a legal appointment under the Mine Health and Safety Act, to assess the person to determine fitness to work on the mine or in any particular capacity. And it's common cause in this matter that Mr. Matebe made the mine aware of his condition, but this issue of continued employment was, of course, the sticking point between the parties and the issues related to his diagnosis. However, he, many, many years later, decided to bring such a claim against Cullinan of a delictual nature. So the core of the matter in issue was jurisdiction and prescription in relation to the claim which he brought. And one then needs to examine how did the court react to this particular situation. So the employee eventually committed himself to a 6-month work hiatus. So he agreed that he would not work at the mine for 6 months because his condition in that period had been worsening. And as I said, after his employer, according to him, had not taken immediate steps which could assist him to provide an environment conducive to his ill health. He, as a result, approached the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy for intervention, which would assist him in making his employer understand the nature of his illness. He still maintained that the employer had shunned that allegation relating to just how severe his illness was. They didn't take any precautionary measure to ensure that the employee was provided the highest degree of support under the circumstances. However, the intervention of the DMRE, the employer was able to take an active step to then reassign him to a different position, hoping that when his 6-month hiatus had expired, he would be able to resume his duties. But he discontinued the employment relationship by resigning with his employer at the end of February 2018. And it then occurs that the employee would, 5 odd years later, bring a delictual claim to the Labour Court while also alleging he was subject to unfair labour practices by his former employer.
Thanks for that detailed explanation, Fiona, of the facts. And it's very interesting that, well, firstly, the employer decided to bring a delictual claim. And also after 5 years, one would really wonder why it took so long for the employee to try to take some action. And it's very interesting as we see that the employee I guess, fail to take those steps, and the employer, on the other hand, fails to take active steps to attend to the employment's health risk on an immediate basis. But at the center of the issue of this case is the issue of delaying steps which are urgent in nature for both parties, right? As we could see. Now, just a question for you, Fiona. How would you then determine the employee's chances of succeeding with his delictual claim under such circumstances, especially in the labor court?
It's an important point, Khadishu, and it goes to what the employer did when it received the employee's statement of claim brought in the labor court, because it raised two special pleas, almost points in limine, if you like, one of which was a special plea that the labor court lacked the necessary jurisdiction to deal with the matter. And that, of course, has to do with understanding the provisions in the Labor Relations Act which confer jurisdiction on the labor court versus its powers. And although it has powers to make compensation orders and even damages in certain circumstances, that is not something which isn't restricted. That's a power, but powers don't give jurisdiction. This is where this employee went very wrong, because the labor court's jurisdiction lies in particular pieces of legislation which confer jurisdiction on it. That's done deliberately, because at the heart of this case, of course, are your constitutional rights to fair labor practice, maintenance of health and safety, etc. But that's not a free-for-all. It's not a situation where you can say, well, yes, there's my constitutional right. I have an opportunity to go to the labor court to advance a claim which is really based in civil law because I'm trying to claim damages against my employer. The Labor Relations Act doesn't confer that power on the labor court, or doesn't give it that jurisdiction. It's important because the High Court, for example, has inherent powers, inherent jurisdiction by virtue of it being a court deriving from our common law. The labor court is a creature of statute. It's a reason why its particular jurisdiction is confined. And there's good reason for it. The Constitutional Court has said time and time again that the labor court should be used rather in circumstances where the matter arises from employment relation issues. Why? Because it's the specialist court. It doesn't want to see the High Court treading on the toes of the labor court's jurisdiction, because then you get two different streams of law, different case law developing, which can become confusing and very difficult for litigants to understand what their rights are and where they should be mounting such a claim. In this particular instance, it's as simple as this. The labor court did not have jurisdiction to entertain a delictual claim based in our civil law. And importantly, something that was not argued in this case, there still wouldn't have been jurisdiction, even if he had mounted the claim in the High Court, because the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act would preclude a civil claim in that manner. Yes, there is, of course, the issue with regard to a different piece of legislation which applies only in the mining sector, being a DIMWA, which is the Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. That one doesn't have a bar against civil claims against the employer mounted in the High Court when compensation is payable under that legislation to a person suffering from an occupational lung disease. But in the Constitutional Court again, there was some criticism over that issue because a DIMWA doesn't have the bar to the civil claim, but COIDA does. So even if he'd had that claim, if he'd gone the DIMWA route, he would still have faced the issue of prescription, which was a three-year period calculated from 2018 within which to mount a claim, which he didn't do. So he was in the wrong court. He was really mounting this without reference to the applicable legislation, and as a consequence, the Labor Court could not come to his assistance.
I think something that is very interesting that we see in this judgment is how in the judgment states that in their heads of argument, they brought up an issue relating to unfair labor practice. And it's very interesting how the court said, well, if that's what you're saying, then you are in the wrong forum. An issue of an unfair labor practice should have been initiated in the CCMA. prior to approaching the Labour Court. And in essence, the matter had landed at the wrong court. And as you've already alluded to, the issue of prescription, because our Prescription Act sets a clear tone that damages claims must be instituted within 3 years from the date which the cause of action arose. Now, we've already discussed that the employee resigned in 2018, which only afforded him a period to expiring in 2021 to make a claim for any delictual damages which he may have suffered. But as you say, even if the issue had not prescribed, he would still be caught wanting. So now, Fiona, in conclusion, I think what are some takeaways that we can draw from this case relating to how employers must manage occupational injuries and diseases in the workplace? And on the other hand, how can employees also ensure that they report timely and act without delay?
I think what is important here is the advisors for Mr. Motsepe didn't quite understand the legislative framework in which this particular set of facts arose, because the Mine Health and Safety Act, and he does refer to Sections 9 and 11 in the Mine Health and Safety Act, fair enough. Section 9 deals with codes of good practice, mandatory codes, which are issued by the, certainly guidelines in respect of them, are issued by the chief inspector, and each mine must follow those guidelines and produce its own code. And in this particular instance is a code of good practice to manage fitness to work in the mining sector. And it's a very intensive piece of, I don't want to call it legislation, but flowing from the legislation, and it needs to be followed. And that is what the employer would have done if this matter had been allowed to take its course and he hadn't resigned in part way, if you like, when his issues certainly arose. But that said, if, for example, an employer didn't follow a code, then it runs into difficulty with the chief inspector, and he's the one that takes steps against the employer in those circumstances. So the most important takeaways from this decision are that the employees must report any workplace injuries that they suffer during the course and scope of employment, and they're obliged to do so on an immediate basis. Employees must be informed about the correct tribunals to approach when making delictual claims. But of course, I've said that is only really applicable in the mining sector. If this is outside of the mining sector, well, there's no such opportunity, because the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act precludes such a civil claim. I've explained why there's that slight tension between Adimwa and Khoida, which was the subject of the Constitutional Court in Manyakai and AngloGold Ashanti. And although the employer may have delayed action in excusing Mr. Motsepe from any occupational mining operations which he claimed contributed to his sickness, a different outcome could have been observed if the employer had made provision for an immediate sick leave so that the employee could recover. But more importantly, he needed to have been assessed for his condition, A, to determine if it was occupationally based. He's complaining about acute asthma. There could have been very different causes for an illness of that nature. Then the courts have stressed time and time again the importance of the principle of what we call subsidiarity. The employer or employee must exhaust all internal and statutory remedies prior to exploring any external remedies. That's to stop a litigant immediately referring their claim under a breach of a constitutional right when there's legislation which underpins how that right is to be ventilated. And in essence, this case sets a reminder that employees should treat their workplace injury claim as a matter of urgency. They've got all the structures within to do it, particularly in the mining sector, and they should be taking advice on the correct forum, and if they wish to lodge a claim, to do so within the prescribed limits. So it also sets a tone that even serious workplace health and safety concerns cannot succeed in the wrong forum or outside of the prescribed statutory timeframes.
Thank you so much, Fiona. That brings us to the end of our conversation today.
Thank you.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.